This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Boundary Side by Robert Jackson Bennett. Read for you by Tara Sands. For Jackson and Harvey. Part 1. Commons. All things have a value. Sometimes the value is paid in coin. Other times it is paid in time and sweat. And finally, sometimes it is paid in blood. Humanity seems most eager to use this latter currency, and we never note how much of it we're spending, unless it happens to be our own. King Ermiades Eupator. Reflections upon Conquest. Chapter 1. Asanciagrado lay face down in the mud, stuffed underneath a wooden deck next to the old stone wall. She reflected that this evening was not going at all as she had wanted. It had started out decently. She'd used her forged identifications to make it onto the Michiel property, and that had gone swimmingly. The guards at the first gates had barely glanced at her. Then she'd come to the drainage tunnel, and that had gone less swimmingly. It had worked, she supposed. The drainage tunnel had allowed her to slink below all the interior gates and walls and get close to the Michiel foundry. But her informants had neglected to mention the tunnel's abundance of centipedes, mud adders, and shit, of both the human and equine variety. Sanchia hadn't liked it, but she could handle it. That had not been her first time crawling through human waste. But the problem with crawling through a river of sewage is that, naturally, you tend to gain a powerful odor. Sanchia had tried to stay downwind from the security posts as she crept through the foundry yards. But just when she reached the north gate, some distant guard had cried out, "Oh my God, what is that smell?" And then, to her alarm, dutifully gone looking for the source. She'd avoided being spotted, but she'd been forced to flee into a dead-end foundry passageway and hide under the crumbling wooden deck, which had likely once been a guard post. But the problem with this hiding place, she'd quickly realized, was it gave her no means of escape. There was nothing in the walled foundry passageway besides the deck, Sanchia, and the guard. Sanchia stared at the guard's muddy boots as he paced by the deck, sniffing. She waited until he walked past her, then poked her head out. He was a big man, wearing a shiny steel cap and a leather cuirass embossed with the logotipo of the Michiel Body Corporate, the candle flame set in the window, along with leather pauldrons and bracers. Most troublingly, he had a rapier sheathed at his side. Sanchia narrowed her eyes at the rapier. She thought she could hear a whispering in her mind as he walked away, a distant chanting. She'd assumed the blade was scribed, but that faint whispering confirmed it. And she knew a scribed blade could cut her in half with almost no effort at all. This was such a damned stupid way to get cornered, she thought, as she withdrew, and I've barely even started the job. She had to get to the carriage fairways, which were probably only about 200 feet away, behind the far wall, and she needed to get to them sooner rather than later. She considered her options. She could dart the man, she supposed, for Sanchia did have a little bamboo pipe, and a set of small but expensive darts that were soaked in the poison of Dollarspina fish, a lethal pest found in the deeper parts of the ocean. Diluted enough, the venom should only knock its victim into a deep sleep, with an absolute horror of a hangover a few hours later. But the guard was sporting pretty decent armor. Sanchia would have to make the shot perfect, perhaps aiming for his armpit. The risk of missing was far too high. She could try to kill him, she supposed. She did have her stiletto, and she was an able sneak, and though she was small, she was strong for her size. But Sanchia was a lot better at thieving than she was killing. And this was a trained merchant house guard. She did not like her chances there. Moreover, Sanchia had not come to the Michiel Foundry to slit throats, break faces, or crack skulls. She was here to do a job. A voice echoed down the passageway.
Ahoy, Niccolo! What are you doing away from your post?
I think something died in the drains again. It smells like death down here.
Oh, hang on,
said the voice. There came the sound of footsteps. Ah, hell, thought Sanchia. Now there are two of them. She needed a way out of this, and fast. She looked back at the stone wall behind her, thinking. Then she sighed, crawled over to it, and hesitated. She did not want to spend her strength so soon, but she had no choice. Sanchia pulled off her left glove, pressed her bare palm to the dark stones, shut her eyes, and used her talent. The wall spoke to her. The wall told her of foundry smoke, of hot rains, of creeping moss, of the tiny footfalls of the thousands of ants that had traversed its mottled face over the decades. The surface of the wall bloomed in her mind, and she felt every crack and every crevice, every dollop of mortar and every stained stone. All of this information coursed into Sanchia's thoughts the second she touched the wall, and among this sudden eruption of knowledge was what she had really been hoping for. Loose stones. Four of them, big ones, just a few feet away from her. And on the other side, some kind of closed, dark space, about 4 feet wide and tall. She instantly knew where to find it, like she'd built the wall herself. There's a building on the other side, she thought. An old one. Good. Sanchia took her hand away. To her dismay, the huge scar on the right side of her scalp was starting to hurt. A bad sign. She'd have to use her talent a lot more than this tonight. She replaced her glove and crawled over to the loose stones. It looked like there had been a small hatch here once, but it had been bricked up years ago. She paused and listened. The two guards now seemed to be loudly sniffing the breeze.
I swear to God, Pietro, said one. It was like the devil's shit.
They began pacing the passageway together. Sanchia gripped the topmost loose stone and carefully, carefully tugged at it. It gave way, inching out slightly. She looked back at the guards, who were still bickering. Quickly and quietly, Sanchia hauled the heavy stones out and placed them in the mud, one after the other. Then she peered into the musty space. It was dark within, but she now let in a little light, and she saw many tiny eyes staring at her from the shadows, and piles of tiny turds on the stone floor. Rats, she thought. Lots of them. Still, nothing to do about it. Without another thought, she crawled into the tiny, dark space. The rats panicked and began crawling up the walls, fleeing into gaps in the stones. Several of them scampered over Sanchia, and a few tried to bite her. But Sanchia was wearing what she called her thieving rig, a homemade, hooded, improvised outfit made of thick gray woolen cloth and old black leather that covered all of her skin and was quite difficult to tear through. As she got her shoulders through, she shook the rats off or swatted them away. But then a large rat, easily weighing 2 pounds, rose up on its hind legs and hissed at her threateningly. Sanchia's fist flashed out and smashed the big rat, crushing its skull against the stone floor. She paused, listening to see if the guards had heard her, and satisfied that they had not, she hit the big rat again for good measure. Then she finished crawling inside and carefully reached out and bricked up the hatch behind her. There, she thought, shaking off another rat and brushing away the turds. That wasn't so bad. She looked around. Though it was terribly dark, her eyes were adjusting. It looked like this space had once been a fireplace where the foundry workers cooked their food long ago. The fireplace had been boarded up, but the chimney was open above her, though she could see now that someone had tried to board up the very top as well. She examined it. The space within the chimney was quite small. But then, so was Sanchia. And she was good at getting into tight places. With a grunt, Sanchia leapt up, wedged herself in the gap, and began climbing up the chimney, inch by inch. She was about halfway up when she heard a clanking sound below. She froze and looked down. There was a bump, and then a crack, and light spilled into the fireplace below her. The steel cap of a guard poked into the fireplace. The guard looked down at the abandoned rat's nest and cried, "Ugh! Seems the rats have built themselves a merry tenement here. That must have been the smell." Sanchia stared down at the guard. If he but glanced up, he'd spy her instantly. The guard looked at the big rat she'd killed. She tried to will herself not to sweat so no drops would fall on his helmet. "Filthy things," muttered the guard. Then his head withdrew. Sanchia waited. Still frozen. She could still hear them talking below. Then, slowly, their voices withdrew. She let out a sigh. This is a lot of risk to get to one damned carriage. She finished climbing and came to the top of the chimney. The boards there easily gave way to her push. Then she clambered out onto the roof of the building, lay flat, and looked around. To her surprise, she was right above the carriage fairway, exactly where she needed to be. She watched as one carriage charged down the muddy lane to the loading dock, which was a bright, busy blotch of light in the darkened foundry yards. The foundry proper loomed above the loading dock, a huge, near-windowless brick structure with six fat smokestacks pouring smoke into the night sky. She crawled to the edge of the roof, took off her glove, and felt the lip of the wall below with a bare hand. The wall blossomed in her mind, every crooked stone and clump of moss, and every good handhold to help her find her way down. She lowered herself over the edge of the roof and started to descend. Her head was pounding, her hands hurt, and she was covered in all manner of filthy things. I haven't even done step one yet, and I've already nearly got myself killed. 20,000, she whispered to herself as she climbed. 20,000 duvats. A king's ransom, really. Sanchia was willing to eat a lot of shit and bleed a decent amount of blood for 20,000 duvats. More than she had so far, at least. The soles of her boots touched earth. And she started to run. The carriage fairway was poorly lit, but the foundry loading dock was ahead, bright with fire baskets and scribed lanterns. Even at this hour, it was swarming with activity as laborers sprinted back and forth, unloading the carriages lined up before it. A handful of guards watched them, bored. Sanchia hugged the wall and crept closer. Then there was a rumbling sound, and she froze and turned her head away, pressing her body to the wall. Another enormous carriage came thundering down the fairway, splashing her with gray mud. After it passed, she blinked mud out of her eyes and watched it as it rolled away. The carriage appeared to be rolling along of its own accord. It wasn't pulled by a horse or a donkey or any kind of animal at all. Unfazed, Sanchia looked back up the fairway. It'd be a pity, she thought, if I crawled through a river of sewage and a pile of rats just to get crushed by a scribed carriage like a stray dog. She continued on and watched the carriages closely as she neared. Some were horse-drawn, but most weren't. They came from all over the city of Tavan, from the canals, from other foundries, or from the waterfront. And it was this last location that Sanchia was most interested in. She sunk down below the lip of the loading dock and crept up to the line of carriages. And as she approached, she heard them whisper in her mind. Murmurings, chatterings, hushed voices. Not from the horse-drawn carriages, those were silent to her, but from the scribed ones. Then she looked at the wheels of the closest carriage and saw it. The interiors of the huge wooden wheels had writing upon them, a sort of languid, joined-up script that looked to be made of silvery, gleaming metal. Sigillums, or sigils, as the Tavani elite called them. But most just called them scrivings. Sanchia had no training in scribing, but the way scribed carriages worked was common knowledge in Tavan. The commands written upon the wheels convinced them that they were on an incline, and so the wheels, absolutely believing this, would feel obliged to roll downhill, even if there was actually no hill at all, and the carriage was actually just rolling along, say, a perfectly flat, if particularly muddy, canal fairway. The pilot sat in the hatch of the carriage, adjusting the controls, which would tell the wheels something like, "Oh, we're on a steep hill now, better hurry up," or, "Wait, no, the hill's flattening out, let's slow down," or, "There's no hill at all now, actually, so let's just stop." And the wheels, thoroughly duped by the scrivings, would happily comply, thus eliminating the need for any horses, or mules, or goats, or whichever other dull creature could be coaxed into hauling people around. That was how scrivings worked. They were instructions written upon mindless objects that convinced them to disobey reality in select ways. Scrivings had to be carefully thought out, though, and carefully wrought. Sanchia had heard stories about how the first scribed carriages didn't have their wheels calibrated properly. So on one occasion, the front wheels thought they were rolling downhill, but the wheels in the back thought they were rolling uphill, which quickly tore the carriage apart, sending the wheels hurtling through the streets of Tavan at phenomenal speeds, with much mayhem and destruction and death ensuing. All of which meant that, despite their being highly advanced creations, hanging around a carriage's wheels was not exactly the brightest of things to do with one's evening. Sanchia crawled to one wheel. She cringed as the scrivings whispered in her ears, growing louder. This was perhaps the oddest aspect of her talents. She'd certainly never met anyone else who could hear scrivings, but it was tolerable. She ignored the sound and poked her index and middle finger through two slits in the glove on her right hand, baring her fingertips to the moist air. She touched the wheel of the carriage with her fingers and asked it what it knew. And much like the wall in the passageway, the wheel answered. The wheel told her of ash, of stone, of broiling flame, of sparks and iron. Sanchia thought, nope. The carriage had probably come from a foundry, and she was not interested in foundries tonight. She leaned around the back of the carriage, confirmed the guards hadn't seen her, and slipped down the line to the next one. She touched the carriage's wheel with her fingertips and asked it what it knew. The wheel knew soft, loamy soil, the acrid smell of dung, the aroma of crushed greenery and vegetation. A farm, probably. Nope, not this one either. She slipped down to the next carriage, this one your average horse-drawn carriage, touched a wheel, and asked it what it knew. The wheel knew of ash and fire and hot and the hissing sparks of smelting ore. This one came from another foundry, she thought. Same as the first. I hope Sark's source was right. If all of these came from foundries or farmland, the whole plan's over before it began. She slipped down to the next carriage, the horse snuffling disapprovingly as she moved. This was the penultimate one in line, so she was running out of options. She reached out, touched a wheel, and asked it what it knew. This one spoke of gravel, of salt, of seaweed, of the tang of ocean spray, and wooden beam soaking above the waves. Sanchia nodded, relieved. That's the one. She reached into a pouch on her rig and pulled out a curious-looking object. A small bronze plate inscribed with many sigils. She took out a pot of tar, painted the back of the plate with it, and reached up into the carriage and stuck the little bronze plate to the bottom. She paused, remembering what her black market contacts had told her.
Stick the guiding plate to the thing you want to go to, and make sure it's stuck hard. You don't want it falling off.
So what happens if it falls off in the street or something? Sanchia had been asked.
Well, then you'll die. Pretty gruesomely, I expect.
Sanchia pressed on the bronze plate harder. Don't you scrumming get me killed, she thought, glaring at it. This job's offering enough damned opportunities as it is. Then she slid out, slipped through the other carriages, and returned to the fairway and the foundry yards. She was more careful this time, and made sure to stay upwind of any guards. She made it to the drainage tunnel quickly. Now she'd have to trudge back through those fetid waters and make straight for the waterfront. Which was, of course, where the carriage she'd tampered with was also bound, since its wheels had spoken to her of sea spray and gravel and salty air, things a carriage would only encounter at the waterfront. Hopefully the carriage would help her get into that highly controlled site. Because somewhere on the waterfront was a safe. And someone incomprehensibly wealthy had hired Sanchia to steal one specific item inside it in exchange for a simply inconceivable amount of money. Sanchia liked stealing. She was good at it. But after tonight, she might never need to steal again. 20,000, she chanted softly. 20,000. 20,000. Lovely, lovely Duvats. She dropped down into the sewers. Chapter 2 Sanchia did not truly understand her talents. She did not know how they worked, what their limits were, or even if they were all that dependable. She just knew what they did and how they could help her. When she touched an object with her bare skin, she understood it. She understood its nature, its makeup, its shape. If it had been somewhere or touched something recently, she could remember that sensation as if it had happened to her. And if she got close to a scribed item or touched one, she could hear it muttering its commands in her head. That didn't mean she could understand what the scribings were saying. She just knew something was being said. Sanchia's talents could be used in a number of ways. A quick, light touch with any object would let its most immediate sensations spill into her. Longer contact would give her a physical sense of the thing she was touching, where its handholds were, where it was weak or soft or hollow, or what it contained. And if she kept her hands on something for long enough, a process which was deeply painful for her. It would give her near-perfect spatial awareness. If she held her hand to a brick in the floor of a room, for example, she'd eventually sense the floor, the walls, the ceiling, and anything touching them. Provided she didn't pass out or vomit from the pain, that is. Because there were downsides to these abilities, Sanchia had to keep a lot of her skin concealed at all times. Or it's difficult to, say, eat a meal with the fork you're holding spilling into your mind. But there were upsides, too. A facility with items is a tremendous boon if you're looking to steal those items. And it meant Sanchia was phenomenally talented at scaling walls, navigating dark passageways, and picking locks. Because picking locks is easy if the lock is actually telling you how to pick it. The one thing she tried hard not to think about was where her talents came from. For Sanchia had gotten her abilities in the same place she'd gotten the lurid white scar that ran down the right side of her skull. The scar that burned hot whenever she overextended her talents. Sanchia did not exactly like her talents. They were as restrictive and punishing as they were powerful. But they'd helped her stay alive. And tonight, hopefully, they would make her rich. The next step was the Fernetsi complex, a 9-story building across from the Tavani waterfront. It was an old structure, built for customs officers and brokers to manage their accounts back before the merchant houses took over almost all of Tavan's trade. But its age and ornate designs were useful for Sanchia, offering many sturdy handholds. "It says something," she thought, grunting as she climbed, "that scaling this big goddamn building is the easiest part of this job." Finally, she came to the roof. She gripped the granite cornices, clambered onto the top of the building, ran to the western side, and looked out, panting with exhaustion. Below her was a wide bay, a bridge crossing it, and on the other side, the Tavani waterfront. Huge carriages trundled across the bridge, their tops quaking on the wet cobblestones. Almost all of them were certainly merchant house carriages, carrying goods back and forth from the foundries. One of the carriages should be the one she'd marked with the guiding plate. "I scrumming well hope so," she thought. "Otherwise, I hauled my stupid ass through a river of shit and up a building for no damned reason at all." For ages, the waterfront had been as corrupt and dangerous as any other part of Tavan that wasn't under direct control of the merchant houses, which was to say, incredibly, flagrantly, unbelievably corrupt. But a few months ago, they'd gone and hired some hero from the Enlightenment Wars, and he'd booted out all the crooks, hired a bunch of professional guards, and installed security wards all over the waterfront, including scribed defensive walls, just like those at the merchant houses, which wouldn't let you in or out without the proper identification. Suddenly, it had become difficult to do illegal things on the waterfront, which was quite inconvenient for Sanchia. So she'd needed to find an alternate way into the waterfront for her job tonight. She kneeled, unbuttoned a pouch on her chest, and took out what was likely her most important tool of the night. It looked like a roll of cloth, but as she unfolded it, it gained a somewhat cup-like shape. When she was finished, Sanchia looked at the little black parachute lying on the rooftop. "This is going to kill me, isn't it?" she said. She took out the final piece of the parachute, a telescoping steel rod. Set into the ends of this rod were 2 small scribed plates. She could hear them chanting and whispering in her head. Like all scribe devices, she had no idea what they were saying. But her black market contacts had given her strict instructions on how all this would work. "It's a 2-part system," Claudia had told her. "You stick the guidance plate to the thing you want to go to. The guidance plate then says to the plates in the rod, 'Hey, I know you think you're your own thing, but you're actually part of this thing that I'm attached to. So you need to get over here and be part of it fast.' And the rod says, 'Really? Oh gosh, what am I doing all the way over here? I need to go be a part of this other thing right away.' And when you hit the switch, it does. Really, really fast." Sanchia was vaguely familiar with this scribing technique. It was a version of the method the merchant houses used to stick bricks and other construction materials together, duping them into thinking they were all one object. But no one tried to use this method over distances. It was considered unstable to the point of being useless. And there were far safer methods of locomotion available. But those methods were expensive. Too expensive for Sanchia. "And the parachute keeps me from falling," Sanchia had said when Claudia was done explaining it all. "No," Claudia had said. "The parachute slows it down. Like I told you, this thing is going to go really, really fast. So you're going to want to be high up when you turn it on. Just make sure the guidance plate is actually where you need it to be, and nothing's blocking your path. Use the test piece first. If it's all lined up, turn on the rod and go. Sanchia reached into yet another pocket and pulled out a small glass jar. In this glass jar was a bronze coin, and inscribed on this coin were sigils similar to the ones on the parachute rod. She squinted at the coin. It was stuck firmly to the side of the glass facing the waterfront. She turned the glass over, and, as if magnetized, the coin zipped across the jar and stuck itself to the other side with a tinny tink. Again, the side facing the waterfront. If this thing is attracted to the guiding plate, she thought, and if the guiding plate is on the carriage, then it means the carriage is at the waterfront. So I'm good. She paused. Probably. Maybe. She hesitated for a long time. Shit, she muttered. Sanchia hated this sort of thing. The logic behind scribing always seemed so stupidly simple, barely logic at all, really. But then, scribing, more or less, bent reality, or at least confused it. She put the jar away and threaded the rod through the tapered end of the parachute. Just think of what Sark told you, she thought. Just think of that number. 20,000 devats. Enough money to fix herself. To make herself normal. Sanchia hit a lever on the side of the rod and jumped off the roof. Instantly, she was soaring through the air across the bay at a speed she'd never thought possible, hauled along by the steel rod, which, as far as she understood, was frantically trying to join the carriage down in the waterfront. She could hear the parachute whipping out behind her and finally catching the air, which slowed her down some. First, not much at all, but then a little more and a little more. Her eyes watered and she gritted her teeth. The nightscape of Tavan was a whirl around her. She could see water glittering in the bay below, the shifting forest of masts from the ships in the harbor, the shuddering roofs of the carriages as they made their way to the waterfront, the smoke unscrolling from the foundries clutched around the shipping channel. Focus, she thought. Focus, idiot. Then things dipped. Her stomach lurched. Something was wrong. She looked back and saw there was a tear in the parachute. Shit. She watched, horrified, as the tear began to widen. Shit. Double shit. The sailing rig lurched again, so hard that she barely noticed she'd flown over the waterfront walls. The rig started speeding up, faster and faster. I need to get off this thing. Now. Now! She saw she was sailing over the waterfront cargo stacks, huge towers of boxes and crates, and some of the stacks looked high indeed. High enough for her to fall and catch herself. Maybe. She blinked tears out of her eyes, focused on one tall stack of crates, angled the rig, and then... She hit the lever on the side of the rod. Instantly, she started losing momentum. She was no longer flying, but was instead drifting down toward the crates, which were about 20 feet below. She was slowed somewhat by the rapidly dissolving parachute, but not enough to make her comfortable. She watched as the giant crates flew up to her. Ah, hell. She hit the corner of the crate so hard that it knocked the wind out of her. Yet she still retained sense to reach out and snag the wooden corner, grabbing hold and clutching to its side. The sailing rig caught some wind and was ripped out of her hands and went drifting away. She hung fast to the side of the crate, breathing hard. She'd trained herself to fall, to catch onto walls in an instant, or bounce or slide off of surfaces. But she'd rarely had to use such training. There was a clank from somewhere to her right, as the sailing rig fell to the ground. She froze and just hung there for a moment, listening for any alarms being raised. Nothing. Silence. The waterfront was a big place. One noise was easy to disregard. Hopefully. Sanchia took her left hand away from the crate, dangling by just one hold, and used her teeth to pull off her glove. Then she pressed her bare left hand to the crate and listened. The crate told her of water and rain and oil and straw and the tiny bite of many nails, and also how to climb down it. Step two, getting in the waterfront, had not gone quite as planned. Now on to step three, she thought wearily, climbing down. Let's see if I can avoid screwing that one up. When Sanchia made it to the ground, at first all she did was breathe hard and rub her bruised side. I made it. I'm inside. I'm there. She peered through the cargo stacks at the building on the far side of the waterfront. The water watch offices. The police force for the waterfront. Well, almost there. She pulled off her other glove, stuffed both of them in her pockets, and placed her hands on the stone surface at her feet. Then she shut her eyes and listened to the stone. This was a hard trick for Sanchia. The ground around her was a wide area, so it was a lot to listen to all at once. But she could still listen, still let the stone spill into her mind, still feel the vibrations and trembling all around her as people walked, stood, ran, shifted feet. Sanchia could feel all of them just as one could feel fingers running down one's own bare back. Nine guards nearby, she thought. Heavy ones. Big men. Two stationary. Seven on patrols. There were doubtlessly many more than that on the waterfront, but her abilities could only see so far through the stones. She noted their positions, their directions, their speed. For the ones close to her, she could even feel their heels on the stones, so she knew which way they were facing. The scar on the side of her head started getting painfully warm. She winced and took her hands away, but the memory of the guards remained, which meant this would be like trying to navigate a familiar room in the dark. Sanchia took a breath, slipped out of the shadows, and started off, dodging through crates, slipping under carts, pausing always just so as guards made their rounds. She tried not to look at the crates as she moved. Most bore markings from the plantations far out in the Durazzo Sea, and Sanchia was well acquainted with such places. She knew that these raw goods, hemp, sugar, tar, coffee, had not been harvested or produced with anything resembling consensual labor. Bastards, thought Sanchia as she slipped through the crates. Bunch of rotten, scrumming bastards. She paused at one crate. She couldn't read its label in the dark, but she placed a bare finger against a wooden slat, listened carefully, and saw within it. Paper. Lots of it. Blank, raw paper. Which should do nicely. Time to prepare an exit strategy, she thought. Sanchia pulled her gloves on, untied one pocket on her thigh, and pulled out her final scribed tool for the evening. A small wooden box. The box had cost her more than she'd ever spent on a job in her life. But without it, her life wouldn't be worth a fig tonight. She placed the box on top of the crate. This should work well enough. She hoped so. Getting out of the waterfront would be a hell of a lot harder if it didn't. She reached back into her pocket and pulled out what looked like a simple knot of twine, running through a thick ball of lead. In the center of this ball was a tiny, perfect clutch of sigils. And as she held it, she heard a soft whispering in her ear. She looked at the ball of lead, then the box on the crates. This scrumming box, she thought, putting the lead ball back in her pocket. Had damned well better work, or I'll be trapped here like a fish in a pot. Sanchia jumped the short fence around the water watch offices and ran to the wall. She crept to the corner of the building, then ducked her head out. No one. But there was a large, thick doorframe. It stuck out about 4 or 5 inches from the wall. Plenty of room for Sanchia to work with. She leapt up and grabbed the top of the doorframe, then pulled herself up, paused to rebalance, and placed her right foot on the top of the frame. Then she hauled herself up until she stood on the doorframe. Two second-floor windows were on her right and left, old and thick with oily yellowed glass. Sanchia pulled out her stiletto, slipped it into the crack in one window, flipped back the latch, and pulled the window open. She sheathed her stiletto, lifted herself up, and peered in. Inside were rows and rows of shelves filled with what looked like parchment boxes, probably records of some kind. The area was deserted, as it ought to be at this time of night, close to 1 in the morning by now. But there was a light downstairs, a candle flame, perhaps. Downstairs is where the safes are, thought Sanchia, which won't be unguarded, even now. She crawled inside, shutting the window behind her. Then she crouched low and listened. A cough, then a sniff. She crept through the shelves until she came to the railing at the edge of the second floor and peered down into the first floor. A single water watch officer sat at a desk at the front door, filling out paperwork, a candle burning before him. He was an older man, plump and timid-looking, with a slightly lopsided mustache and a crinkled blue uniform. But it was what was behind him that really interested Sanchia. For there sat a row of huge iron safes, nearly a dozen of them. And one of them, she knew, was the safe she'd come for. But now, she thought, what to do about our friend down there? She sighed as she realized what her only option was. She took her bamboo pipe out and loaded it with a dollar spina dart. Another 90 devats spent on this job, she thought. Then she gauged the distance between herself and the guard, who was tisking and scratching out something on the page before him. She placed the pipe to her lips, aimed carefully, breathed in through her nose, and then... Before she could fire, the front door of the water watch offices slammed open, and a large, scarred officer strode through, clutching something wet and dripping in one hand. She lowered the pipe. Well, shit. The officer was tall, broad, and well-muscled, and his dark skin, dark eyes, and thick black beard suggested he was a pure-blood Tavani. The hair atop his head was cut close, and his appearance and bearing immediately made Sanchia think of a soldier. He had the look of a man used to having his words listened to and acted upon immediately. This new arrival turned to the officer seated at the desk, who looked no less surprised than Sanchia to see him.
"Captain Dandolo,"
said the officer at the desk,
"I thought you'd be out at the piers tonight."
The name was familiar to Sanchia. Dandolo was the name of one of the 4 main merchant houses, and she'd heard that the new waterfront captain had some kind of elite connections. Ah, she thought, so this is the striper who's taken it upon himself to reform the waterfront. She drew back into the shelves, though not so far that she couldn't see.
"Something wrong, sir,"
said the officer at the desk.
"One of the boys heard a sound out in the stacks and found this."
His voice was terribly loud, like he spoke to fill up every room he was in with whatever he had to say. Then he held up something ragged and wet, and Sanchia immediately recognized it as the remains of her air sailing rig. She grimaced. Shit.
"Is that a kite?"
said the officer at the desk.
"No,"
said Dandolo.
"It's an air sailing rig, what the merchant houses use for mercantile espionage. It's an unusually poor version, but that's what it seems to be."
"Wouldn't the walls have notified us if someone unauthorized crossed over the barrier?"
"Not if they crossed over high enough."
"Ah," said the sergeant, "and you think..."
He looked over his shoulder at the line of safes.
"I'm having the boys comb the stacks as we speak,"
said Dandolo.
But if they're mad enough to fly into the waterfront with this thing, maybe they're mad enough to go for the safes.
He sucked his teeth.
Keep an eye out, Sergeant, but stay at your post. I'll look around, just to see. Right, sir.
Sanchia watched with growing horror as Dandolo mounted the stairs, the wood creaking under his considerable weight.
Shit. Shit.
She considered her options. She could go back to the window, open it up, slip outside, and stand on the doorframe below, waiting for Dandolo to leave. But this took a lot of risks, since she could be seen or heard by the man. She could shoot Dandolo with the dollar spina dart. That would likely cause him to go tumbling back down the stairs, alarming the sergeant below, who could then raise the alarm. She debated if she could reload in time to hit him, too, and found this plan no better. Then she had a third idea. She reached into her pocket and pulled out the knot of twine and the scribed lead ball. She'd intended to save this final trick as a distraction while she made her escape. But then she did need to escape from this current situation. She put away her pipe, gripped each end of the twine knot, and looked up at the approaching captain, who was still climbing the stairs in front of her. "You're an asshole for scrumming this up for me," she thought. She gripped the ends of the twine knot and ripped it untied in one fast motion. Sanchia vaguely understood how the scribing mechanism worked. The interior of the lead ball was lined with sandpaper, and the twine was treated with fire potash, so when it was ripped through the sandpaper, it ignited. Just a small flare, but that was enough. Because the scribed ball in her hands was linked with a second lead ball, which was far, far away in the box atop the paper crates in the cargo stacks. Both balls were altered to be convinced that they were actually the same ball, and thus, whatever happened to the one, happened to the other. Dunk one in cold water, and the other would grow rapidly cool. Shatter one, and the other would shatter as well. So this meant that when she pulled the twine and ignited the flare inside, the second ball in the cargo stacks suddenly grew burning hot too. But the second ball was packed in quite a lot more fire potash, and the box it sat in was filled to the brim with flash powder. The instant Sanchia ripped the twine through the lead ball, she heard a faint boom way out in the cargo stacks. The captain paused on the stairs, bewildered.
"What the hell was that?" he said.
"Captain?"
called the sergeant downstairs.
"Captain!"
He turned away from Sanchia and called down the stairs.
"Sergeant, what was that?"
"I don't know, Captain, but there's smoke."
Sanchia turned toward the window and saw that the scribed device had worked quite well. There was now a thick column of white smoke out in the cargo stacks, along with a cheery flame.
"Fire!"
shouted the captain.
"Shit! Come on, Prezzo!"
Sanchia watched, pleased, as the two of them sprinted out the door. Then she dashed downstairs to the safes. "Let's hope it keeps burning," she thought as she ran. "Otherwise, I might crack the safe and get the prize. But I'll have no tricks left to get me off the waterfront." Sanchia looked at the line of safes. She remembered Sark's instructions.
"It's safe 23D, a small wooden box. The combinations are changed every day. Dandolo is a clever bastard. But it should be no issue for you, girl, should it?"
She knew it shouldn't, but then she was now working with a much tighter deadline than she'd previously planned for. Sanchia approached 23D and took her gloves off. These safes were where civilian passengers stored away valuables with the Water Watch, specifically passengers unaffiliated with the merchant houses. If you were affiliated with one of the merchant houses, it was assumed you'd store your valuables with them directly, because they, being the manufacturers and producers of all scribed rigs, would have far better security and protection than just a bunch of safes with combination locks. Sanchia placed one bare hand on 23D. Then she leaned her bare forehead against it, took the tumbler wheel in her other hand, and shut her eyes. The safe blossomed to life in her mind, telling her of iron and darkness and oil, the chattering of its many toothed gears, the clinkings and clankings of its stupendously complicated mechanisms. She slowly started turning the wheel and felt instantly where it wanted to go. She slowed the combination wheel down and, click, one tumbler fell into place. Sanchia breathed deep and started turning the wheel in the opposite direction, feeling the mechanisms clicking and clanking inside the door. There was another boom out in the cargo yard. Sanchia opened her eyes. Pretty sure I didn't do that one. She looked back at the window on the western side of the offices and saw that the greasy glass panes were dancing with greedy firelight. Something must have caught out there. Something much more flammable than the paper crate she'd intended to set alight. She heard shouting, screaming, and cries out in the yard. Ah, hell, she thought. I need to hurry before the whole damned place burns down. She shut her eyes again and kept turning the wheel. She felt it clicking into place, felt that perfect little gap approaching, and the scar on her head burning hot, like a needle in her brain. I'm doing too much. I'm pushing myself too damned far. Click. She sucked her teeth. That's two. More screams from outside. Another soft boom. She focused. She listened to the safe, letting it pour into her, feeling the anticipation of the mechanism within, feeling it wait with bated breath for that one final turn. Click. She opened her eyes and turned the handle on the safe. It opened with a clunk. She swung it open. The safe was filled with an abundance of items, letters, scrolls, envelopes, and the like. But at the back was her prize, a wooden box, about 8 inches long and 4 inches deep. A simple, dull box, unremarkable in nearly every way. And yet this bland thing was worth more than all the precious goods Sanchia had ever stolen in her life combined. She reached in and picked up the box with her bare fingers. Then she paused. Her abilities had been so taxed by the evening's excitement that she could tell something was curious about the box, but not immediately what. She got a hazy picture in her mind of pine wood walls within walls, but not much more. It was like trying to look at a painting in the dark during a lightning storm. She knew that wasn't important, though. She was just meant to get it and not ask questions about its contents. She stowed it away in a pouch on her chest. Then she shut the safe, locked it, and turned and ran for the door. As she exited the Water Watch offices, she saw that the little fire was now a full-on blaze. It looked like she'd set the entire damned cargo yard alight. Water Watch officers sprinted around the inferno, trying to contain it, which meant likely all of the exits were now available for her to use. She turned and ran. If they find out I did this, she thought, I'll be Harpered for sure. She made it to the eastern exit of the waterfront. She slowed, hid behind a stack of crates, and confirmed that she was right. All the officers were tending to the blaze, which meant it was unguarded. She ran through, head aching, heart pounding, and the scar on the side of her head screaming in pain. Yet, just as she crossed, she looked back for one moment, watching the fire. The entire western fifth of the waterfront was now a wild blaze, and an unbelievably thick column of black smoke stretched up and curled about the moon above. Sanchia turned and ran. Chapter 3. A block away from the waterfront, Sanchia slipped into an alley and changed clothing, wiping the mud from her face, rolling up her filthy thieving rig, and putting on a hooded doublet, gloves, and hosiery. She cringed as she did so. She hated changing clothes, She stood in the alley and shut her eyes, wincing as the sensations of mud and smoke and soil and dark wool bled out of her thoughts, and bright, crunchy, crispy hemp fabric surged in to replace them. It was like stepping out of a nice warm bath and jumping into an icy lake, and it took some time for her mind to recalibrate. Once this was done, she hurried away down the street, pausing twice to confirm she'd not been followed. She took a turn, then another. Soon the huge merchant house walls swelled up on either side of her, white and towering and indifferent. Michelle on the left, Dandolo on the right. Behind those walls were the merchant house enclaves, commonly called campos, where the merchant houses ran their clutch of neighborhoods like their own little kingdoms. Clinging to the bases of the walls was a tall, rambling stretch of ramshackle wooden tenements and rookery buildings and crooked chimneys, an improvised, makeshift, smoky tangle of soaking warren stuffed between the two campo walls, like a raft trapped between two converging ships. Foundry side. The closest thing Sanchia had to a home. She passed through an alley and was greeted by a familiar scene. Fire baskets sparked and hissed at the street corners ahead. A taverna on her left was still thriving, even at this hour, its old yellow windows glimmering with candlelight, cackles and curses spilling through the drapes across the entrance. Weeds and vines and rogue nut trees tumbled out of the flooded alleys, as if launching an ambush. Three old women on a balcony above watched her passage, all picking at a wooden plate, upon which sat the remains of a striper, a large, ugly water bug that turned a rather pretty striped violet pattern when boiled. The scene was familiar, but it didn't make her any more relaxed. The Tavani Commons were Sanchia's home, but her neighbors were just as ruthless and dangerous as any merchant house guard. She took back passageways to her rookery building and slipped in through a side door. She walked down the hallway to her rooms, felt the door with a bare index finger, then the floorboards. They told her nothing unusual. It seemed things hadn't been tampered with. She unlocked all six of the locks on the door, walked in, and locked it again. Then she crouched and listened, her bare index finger stuck to the floorboards. She waited 10 minutes. The throbbing in her head slowly returned, but she had to be sure. When nothing came, she lit a candle. She was tired of using her talents to see, crossed her room, and opened the shutters of her windows just a crack. Then she stood there and watched the streets. For 2 hours, Sanchia stared out the tiny crack at the street below. She knew she had good reason to be paranoid. She'd not only just pulled off a 20,000 juvat job, she'd also just burned down the damned Tavani waterfront. She wasn't sure which was worse. If someone had happened to look up at Sanchia's window and catch a glimpse of her, they likely would have been struck by the sight. She was a young girl, barely older than 20, but she'd already lived more than most people ever would, and you could see it in her face. Her dark skin was weather-beaten and hard, the face of someone for whom starvation was a frequent occurrence. She was short but muscular, with bulky shoulders and thighs, and her hands were calloused and hard as iron, all consequences of her occupation. She sported a lopsided, self-applied haircut, and a lurid, jagged scar ran along her right temple, approaching close to her right eye, whose whites were slightly muddier than those of the left. People did not like it when Sanchia looked at them too hard. It made them nervous. After 2 hours of watching, Sanchia felt satisfied. She closed her shutters, locked them, and went to her closet and removed the false floor. It always discomfited her to open up the floor there. The Commons had no banks or treasuries, so the whole of her life savings was squirreled away in that dank niche. She took the pine box out of her thieving rig, held it in her bare hands, and looked at it. now that she'd had some time to recover. The screaming pain in her skull had subsided into a dull ache.